Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Hello and welcome to day three of our countdown to Super Bowl 51. Inside the Huddle here, still on Radio Row in the Super Bowl Media Center in Houston, Texas. I'm joined by my regular podcast partner and Sky Sports resident coach, Jeff Reinbold. And we are joined right from the beginning today by NFL royalty. This man is incredible. Rocky Blyer, a four-time Super Bowl winner of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Rocky, thanks for joining us. What's it like when you get back around the Super Bowl every year?
I enjoy coming back because it gives me a chance to see all you people. once a year, I get a chance to touch base, with broadcasters and with writers and former players. Otherwise, you just don't get a chance to do it. So, for me, it's always a thrill to come back and be part of it. But also, it's always a thrill because I can then always show people that I got four Super Bowl rings. Say that just in case they wanted to know where they were. A lot of these guys have some Super Bowl rings, but they don't have four Super Bowl rings. And so I'm very proud to have been able to be on that team with Pittsburgh from Super Bowls 9, which is this one, 51? Holy man. 9, 10, 13, and 14. Minnesota Vikings, two against the Dallas Cowboys, and the fourth against the then LA Rams. So
we're going to talk about your story in a second, Rocky, because it is one of the most incredible stories you will hear in NFL history. We'll talk about that. But Jeff, that's incredible. When you see these guys fighting to get, some of these guys are fighting for their
guys
first
play their whole career, never even get a chance to get in the game. He had to retire. This is a little known fact about Rocky Black. He had to retire because when he had four, he had no fingers left.
That's right.
He couldn't get any more Super Bowls.
He was going to run out of real estate on your hand. Rocky started playing for the Pittsburgh Steelers in 1968. Now, I know your story. I was telling you, I wrote about you in my book about the toughest players in NFL history because it's one of the most inspirational stories. Just tell us what happened to you. You started out as a professional player, and then you went off to fight in the Vietnam War.
You know, I first of all, I got to thank you for including me in that book.
It's an honor, man.
Everybody, you know, every guys who play, you know, they all think they're tough. You know, they all think they're tough, and they all want to be on the tough guy list. And there wasn't a big tough guy list until this book came out. So now I can officially say that
you're a tough guy, Ron.
There you go.
At the end of one of the top 50.
I could be the 50th.
I could be the 50th. No, that's okay.
I wasn't brave enough to rank. I didn't want to rank them because I didn't want to upset the tough guys. You know, you got to be careful with you tough guys. Tell us your story about how the adversity you went through and how you fought back.
So I came to I came to the Pittsburgh Steelers in 1968, and I was a very highly touted draft choice. I was the 417th person picked in the draft that year. I was the 16th round draft choice.
Wow.
But you have to understand, there were 17 rounds, so I wasn't the last guy picked, you know. For some godforsaken reason, I made the team that year, primarily playing on special teams. But it's also 1968, so it was the height of the Vietnam conflict that was taking place. And the draft was a very prevalent part of all of our lives, no matter what you, and who you might be. And so I got caught in the mix, and I got my draft notification in December of that year after the 10th, 11th game of the season. And I was gone and went to the military and ultimately went to Vietnam, like thousands of other young men during that period of time. And my story was that we got caught into a military action. We had an insurgent of NVA soldiers coming into our region. So we had a situation with the Marines and ourselves. And anyway, we got caught in a firefight, and in that firefight, I got wounded twice in that same day. Shot through the left leg and hit by a grenade that blew up through my right foot, knee, and thigh. And eventually, we got out of that situation and went to an aid station medically, and then to Da Nang, 3 weeks in Tokyo, And then I spent 9 months in a hospital thereafter with the injuries that I had sustained.
And you lost part of your foot?
I didn't lose part of the foot. I had massive nerve damage and muscle damage in within that foot. And so prognosis was that I would not be able to come back and play again. But, you know, being a dumb Irishman.
Stubborn Irish guy from Notre Dame.
That's right. You know, I thought, we'll see. I didn't lose. It's part of it is how you process that information and your perception of yourself and so on. Okay, I didn't lose a leg. I didn't lose an arm. Yeah. You know, and one of the things that you learn in playing sports is that you do get hurt. You do get injured. You might have some broken bones. You might have pulled muscles. But even as a kid, what you learn is that heals. I mean, in time, it heals. And you rehab, and then you're back out playing. You know, it might be whatever it might be. So that was
Rocky,
my
you're opinion. Being very, very modest, no, because there are sprained ankles, and then there are hand grenades. And Jeff, I wrote about when Rocky came back, and I remember you telling me this, he couldn't run 50 yards without falling flat on his face. And you're literally at the bottom of the barrel, and then four Super Bowls later, it's one of the most incredible
comeback
stories
ever. Yeah. And it was featured in a Rocky's book, which I read as a young kid, right? Now, this is how crazy this is, Neil. I sold programs at Notre Dame Stadium when he was a running back at Notre Dame. Wow. And he was my hero.
All these connects, like six degrees of separation.
Rocky was the hero of every small, tough, white running back in America. I'm telling you.
Well, I just wanted to reaffirm is that I told him as well, I sold programs. At Notre Dame Stadium. My freshman year. Because freshmen
weren't eligible.
Weren't eligible that time. Right. And so you could make a couple bucks, you know, when you sold. And you had to make a couple bucks at that time. And so I was selling program. So
but,
that was
Neil, it's such an amazing story in of perseverance. And I think, and I'll be interested to hear you say this, about the Steelers organization and the Rooneys. Would that have happened? Would you have had time to 2 years to come back in other places?
Probably. I don't know whether other places. Probably not, and maybe not today, given the immediacy of a team and you know what they perceive you to be. But I also think you know the nature of the ownership and the nature of the family and the importance of taking care of their players. And so this was some way of being able to you know. And I'm not saying alleviating guilt, but, you know, saying, oh, you know, this is what happened. So let's see what happens from there and so on. He's a pretty good kid and, you know, he works hard. And so, you know, and so what they do, and I tell people this, but it's important in all our lives, is that there's opportunities that prevail. And it's what you do with that opportunity or how you view it that becomes important. So if you don't take advantage of it, you know, and so my whole mindset was there's only so much I can do. This is what I can do. I can get myself stronger. I can heal. I can run. I can get myself in condition. I can't make the team. They have to decide whether I'm capable of making a team. But you don't want to get to a point in your life where you look back and you say, oh, maybe I should have tried or I should have done this or I should have. And you try to erase those should haves so that, you know, if it doesn't work out, you'd be sad, but you don't have to look over your shoulder.
Rocky, apart from wandering around here making modern-day players feel bad that they haven't got four Super Bowls.
They're not as tough as you and don't have Super Bowl
One,
rings.
You're not as tough. Two, you're not as successful. Three, you don't speak as well. Do you still a fan of the game? Do you still watch the game a lot? Do you still love it on Sundays? And what do you think is going to happen in this Super Bowl?
Yes, I do. I mean, I'm a fan. I'm not a fanatic fan. Right. I'm a fan. I'm the average fan, okay? Yeah. I've become the average fan where I watch the games. I like good games. You know, I'll watch a game. What I like is I'll watch it's the fourth quarter. Oh, it's 3 minutes to go. Oh, the game is tied and or it's only 3 points separated. Who's going to win? What's going to happen? So that, you know, this.
You mean to tell me you don't get your terrible towel out on Sunday afternoon and sit in your man cave?
No, I don't. Yeah. So when you get to a point like this, whether it be the championship game or the Super Bowl game, you know, so my interest is, okay, how? What's going to happen here? What are the adjustments? What is Belichick going to do? And how is Atlanta specifically going to handle that hurry-up offense? I mean, what can they do? Yeah. They take a look at the Steeler films or other films, okay, and say, all right, well, we can't play zone. All
right, exactly.
Let's play some other.
Exactly.
And they got the capability of playing man-to-man or how they do it. They got to put pressure on Brady. So I want to see whether they can do that and then make the adjustments that are necessary. And then also the second thing is who's going to step up? Who's going to step up to make the play, whatever it might be.
Sometimes get an unsung hero.
An unsung hero, but sometimes people...
This guy right here. One of the all-time great plays against the Cowboys, and we were talking about it down in Radio Rare. Rocky and I are not very tall, right? And Bradshaw throws a ball that it has to be 11 feet high in the end zone. And Rocky goes up, and it's an iconic picture. He stretched, his entire body stretched, and he made
the doctors put a few springs in there. That's what they did, put some springs
in there. I asked him, how did you make that catch? He goes, I was just a superior athlete.
Adrenaline, right.
That's right. You know, so it was no problem jumping 18, 19 feet. You know, I do that every day. And throw. But it was like, I threw my hands up for it, and when it stuck, you know, I was as surprised as anybody.
Yeah, holy man. That's the great thing about the Super Bowl, Rocky, is that those plays you make, and players will make these plays on Sunday that they can be talking about walking around here in 20 years.
And you're right. And so the plays they don't make or they should have made,
very,
you know,
true.
Or
very
what
true.
Could have happened, you know, and that shouldn't. And so that's what I'm looking forward to in this game. Obviously, I'm going to tell you this right out. I am rooting for Atlanta.
Okay. So I'm going to put you on the spot. So you're rooting for Atlanta.
I'm rooting for Atlanta. I'm rooting. Right. Don't ask me who I think. I'm rooting for Atlanta.
Well, I haven't got another question now. That was what I was going to ask. So we will leave it there. Yeah. Just say you are rooting for Atlanta. And Rocky, thank you so much for joining us. Make sure you stick with us on Inside the Huddle here in the Super Bowl Media Center. We'll be back after this short break. Hello and welcome back to Inside the Huddle. We are here in the Super Bowl Media Center in Houston, Texas, joined by another very special guest now, Sebastian Vollmer of the New England Patriots, 8-year offensive tackle from Germany. Sebastian, thanks for joining us. How is it this week for you? You're injured and not been able to play this season. How is it being around the team but not being able to be fully involved?
It's different. I mean, this is going to be my third Super Bowl. But obviously my role was a little different, like you were saying. I'm injured. It's more about rehab. And, you know, right now I'm trying to stay out of the way. I think, like, the help I can provide to younger players, the thing I've done. And now it's really about, you know, letting them do their thing. Obviously they had a great year. And, like, you know, I kind of step back and at least I get to hang out with a couple of cool dudes.
Coach, yeah, Jeff, we were just saying before we started recording here, us three haven't been together for many, many years when Sebastian was about 17 years old. And you discovered him in Europe.
Sebastian, what would that have been, like 2004? 2003?
Nah,
2002.
Team Europe, 2002. Hospital in that little
South of Barcelona,
place.
Yeah. Freezing cold on the coast.
And you know what was so amazing about this kid was I get a call and they say, there's a big kid over playing for the Dusseldorf Panther, right? Which is the youth team in Dusseldorf. So I go over and I walk out on the field and there's all these helmets at this level. Then all of a sudden there's this one helmet that's like this. And he was the skinniest kid, but he could bend, right? When I watched him as a coach, he could bend. And the thing that really was different about him as opposed to almost every other kid you see at that age, particularly big kids, he had a nasty streak in him.
Right.
Even as a young player. You could see him finishing blocks. And I remember going back to Tony Allen. I said, I think we might have found the one.
Yeah, Sebastian, we were in Spain, and it was Team Europe, the all-star team for teenage players around Europe. And we're at a presentation, and they're talking about what you do with public relations, what you do with the media. And then Jeff stands up and makes you stand up and tell every player in that room, this is what you got to look like. I mean, talk about put you on the spot, but it was quite a journey for you to come from that to here in the NFL and being around your third Super Bowl.
That's right. I mean, it's been, like we were saying earlier, 2002. By the way, I do want to say extra on camera, but this man has never taken credit for anything he has done for me. And like people ask me all the time, how have you done, you know, done this stuff and whatnot? And I say him all the time. You know, it's like, really, Jeff really helped me. He believed in me when I didn't believe in myself. Like, we were sitting in my mother's living room, my father and mother, and they were talking to me. It was him and Patrick Izuma, and talking about this vision they had of me, like, hey, I think you can either go NFL Europe or you can go to college, and maybe there's even more in it for you. And I mean, I looked at him like, you know, David Hasselhoff after a rough night. Like, I didn't know what to believe. Just like, A, I didn't understand English, so I was like, I don't know what you're saying. I had to wait for the translation. My parents are thinking, well, you want to send my son to the States? Great idea.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah,
awesome.
Send him away.
So, I mean, it's been quite a journey, like you were saying. Huh? It's been like 3 years, I mean, third Super Bowl, 8 years in the pros. It's been 5 years. Got my free education, so it's been an amazing journey, and you know, it's been incredible.
There must be more of these guys out there, Jeff, right?
Yeah, there are. They're out there, and that to me was to watch him, to have watched him go through what he went through, and how hard it was. And again, like you say, Sebastian didn't really have a great grasp of English at the start, and then he came to the University of Houston here, and I remember I came to check on him one time, and I talked to Art Browse, the head coach, and. I said, how's he doing? And Art kind of, well, we really don't know what to do with him. You know, we tried to make him a defensive lineman. Then we tried to make him a tight end. We don't know if he's ever going to be big enough, da, 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 da. Then the next time I saw him, we're at SMU, and we come over and we play Houston. And he had grown up, and he was he was that guy that we just believed. And I people can't appreciate how hard what he did is to go from being the just this skinny kid that came was a swimmer as as a young kid, got out of the pool, came to dry land, and turned into an NFL football player.
See, Jeff,
it's a movie. It should be a movie.
You hanging around swimming pools was going to pay off eventually. I knew it'd work, man. I knew you'd get there in the end.
I've seen his Twitter. Paddleboard surfing.
Sebastian, we're here all the time as we start to look ahead to Super Bowl 51. We hear about the Patriot Way. Yep. What is the Patriot Way? Is there any mystical formula? What does it mean?
So it's the only team I've played for, so it's the only way I know. So I don't know if that's different from, like, I don't want to say this is different from what the Falcons do, for example. I just don't know. But I think stuff we believe in is doing your job. I mean, that's like a phrase, but it's like you can't do somebody else's job. In order to be successful, 11 guys on the team have to do their work, have to do what they do to the best of their abilities. The hard work, you're putting in the extra hours. And like we always say, there's like three different speeds. There's preseason, there's regular season, and there's playoffs.
Yeah.
And like before the Super Bowl, you talk about like, what else can I do? Is there anything else? Is there more sleep? Is there better nutrition? Is there maybe extra massage, more film, whatever it is? There's really this concentrate on what you have to do before you can help anybody else. And then you know, it's not about the rah-rah, like, let's do this, do that, all that stuff. It's kind of like, if everyone does their job, I think we're coached well enough that it's probably going to work out.
And Jeff, this is why when we were on tour recently, we were with Browns linebacker Christian Kirks. He said these guys are the most technically sound team, and maybe what Sebastian's just said there is why this team goes that way at the end of the season and is an ascending team at the right time of the year.
I really believe that, Neil. I think that when you look at teams coming out of training camp, everybody works hard in training camp. Everybody works hard in OTAs, you know, off-season program, all that stuff, and you're coached hard in training camp. But the tendency is in pro football is once you come out of training camp is your fundamentals particularly to go this way. Defense, tackling, offense, your body position, your ability to move your feet, play hand placement, all the things that you have to do as an offensive lineman. And when you watch the Patriots, they don't dissipate over the season. They come on the rise.
Sebastian, we hear lots of talk about Tom Brady all the time, and rightly so. He's playing in his seventh Super Bowl, chasing the one for the thumb this year, number five. What's he like in the locker room? What's he like as a teammate? Take us in that Patriots locker room. Tell us about Tom Brady.
I mean, I can't say enough good things about the guy. I mean, what you see outside the locker room is kind of the true professional. Does what he needs to do, takes care of his body. Obviously, he's 39 years old, playing at an incredible level, maybe the best he's ever played. One of the best quarterbacks, if not the best. I mean, it's up for discussion. But just the incredible leader he is. He holds himself to that incredible standard. You should see him in practice. He misses a throw he should have made. I mean, he is upset. Yeah. We're talking about same level of being upset as you lose a Super Bowl. Like, I mean, just let nothing slide. And kind of to the point what Jeff was saying, like, it might be week 15. You might have the first seed locked up. It doesn't matter. Perfection is really what he strives for. And but he is also, I mean, he's a family man. He's a good dude to be around. You know, he's a pleasant guy. But quite honestly, not different than you or me, you know, just a guy that loves what he does, really passionate about football, and, you know, just is an awesome quarterback to have.
Jeff, Sebastian said that he takes great care of his body, and he's going to be 39 years old and 186 days. If he wins on Sunday, it's the second oldest quarterback, only Peyton Manning last year older. But the end doesn't seem anywhere close, and we haven't heard any of that kind of stuff. He looks like he'd just play another 10 years if
there's
he wanted.
A couple things that I watching him this week that have surprised me, and I was going to ask you about this. Has he done something with his diet? Because he looks leaner than I've seen him in a while. And then the other thing is, I think that competitive fire that he has is
he
got
hits
a
reset,
long
right?
way. Yeah, it's got a long way before that runs out.
Yeah, two things. So he has a thing, what he calls a TB12 method. He has like a little place where our stadium is, and he believes greatly in nutrition, and he believes in not to eat nightshades and all these things. So definitely, like he's very strict with himself. I don't think there's no refined sugar, no caffeine, no bad foods in general. He goes to bed at 8:30 at night. You know, that's really takes care. No,
see, I do that.
I'm going to ask you this question: have you ever seen his combine stuff? Have you ever seen, you know at the combine where you stand in your underwear?
Yeah.
He had a bad body at 21 years old. He looks better now than
he's
did
like,
at the.
It's like Benjamin Button. It's better.
Right, Jeff, talking of bad, we're going to, you, of course, Sebastian, you do your Seabass School of German. You can check it out online. It's been great. Tom Brady's been on there. Rob Gronkowski as well. So we want you to teach us a little bit, if that's all right.
Go
do you want to start with Coach?
No, definitely.
So, Jeff, you're gonna try to say in German, Jeff, Tom Brady eats too many vegetables. So what is that for Jeff?
Tom Brady isst zu viele Gemüse. Zu viel Gemüse.
Tom Brady isst zu viele Gemüse. Tom Brady is zu viele.
Without the E at the end, sorry. Zu viel Gemüse.
Zu viel Gemüse.
That's pretty good. I mean,
that
I
was
don't
good
know.
Actually.
He's been around in Germany for a while.
Now I'm worried
ich
now.
Ich bin klein Deutsch.
I can't speak a word of German.
Ich arbeite in Deutsch 3 Jahre.
I can't speak any German, so this could be. For me, it's going to be Tom Brady has much more hair than me.
Very true.
Don't say any swear words, Jeff. This will never make it to air.
This is being censored.
So I can do the Tom Brady bit. I heard that.
Okay.
So Tom Brady.
That's good, Neil. Good German.
Very good.
Thanks.
I like that bit, the British accent, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it has some flair to it. Tom Brady had mehr Haare als ich.
Tom Brady had mehr Haare
als ich.
Als ich. What are you doing with your tongue?
Als ich.
Like a snake. Okay.
Well, not tongue forward. Tongue goes back.
All right. So Tom Brady
had mehr Haare.
Ich mehr Haare.
Als ich.
That was a bit.
By the way, they wrote this down, so they're practiced. I'm convinced.
No.
It's the last. Tom Brady.
Hat mehr Haare. Als ich. It's not. We're close
enough.
That's
as good as it's going to get.
How about the lightsaber? That's what
Tom was great at that, right?
So I went to him, right? It's in the locker room. She's like, hey, do you want to do me a favor? He's like, whatever you need. I was like, all right, come with me. So we go up to the little film session we had. And he's like, hey, do you want to see the script? Nope. Whatever we got to do, we got to do. So we sit down. I tell him the stuff, and that comes out. I mean, that man is great.
Excellent.
It's just like.
I learned something that day. You know the German for touchdown?
Touchdown.
Boom. There you go. See?
Fluent.
Just finishing up, Sebastian, obviously we've got to move off our German because it's very bad. What was it like to lift that Vince Lombardi trophy when you did it a couple of years back against the Seattle Seahawks?
It's an incredible feeling. So obviously you see like media coverage, all that stuff. The entire week is so intense and you see, you know, your nerves kind of rise, your emotions and all that stuff. And then obviously the way we finished the game, like we were about to be scored on. So then we would have been behind, and then our plan was, okay, we're gonna have 30 seconds left. What can we do? Like, do we have a Hail Mary? What are we gonna run here? Yeah. And then all of a sudden, we hear this noise. Like, we're still talking to the offensive coordinator, and we hear this noise, the Malcolm Butler interception.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you're trying to orient yourself. You're looking around. It's like, you don't know who's cheering because like 50-50 Seahawks and Patriots. And just like, what happened? We won, what is happening? And you just lose it. I mean, it's just the most incredible feeling. You jump up and down. And then you make these like weird noises of you go screaming, and you're just like, what's going on? And then you know you're still 30 seconds, you're on your own 1 yard line, you still don't mess up kind of thing, gather yourself.
Get out of the end zone.
But it's an unbelievable feeling, you know. And then my family was down there sharing it with them. It was great. It was
good,
awesome.
Good for you. And that's the perfect time for our show for us to say, Auf Wiedersehen. Is that right?
Auf Wiedersehen. Very
excellent.
Good.
All right. Thanks to Sebastian Vollmer for joining us. Jeff Reinbold, this has been Inside the Huddle. We'll be back again tomorrow, and we'll see you then. Bye for
Cheers.
Now. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Cheers.